abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
And welcome, everybody, on this October 8th, 2013. We are adding new features to the program all the time. I understand right now we have a chat feature. If you are listening to the daily stream of the program, the first opportunity you have to hear the program every day is at tomwoodsradio.com at noon Eastern. There's a stream of the program, and then after that, you'll find it in the archive. You'll find we have an RSS feed now. We're in iTunes. We've got all these different ways for you to get the program downloaded. But if you're listening to the stream at noon Eastern, you can now chat with other listeners about how awesome it is, and isn't that fantastic? So I'm very happy about that. Remember also, before we get to our guest today, who is a great guest, you're absolutely going to love, I do want to remind you this week, my special giveaway, and if you hear this after this week, after, let's see, I guess October 11th, 2013 is the last day I'm offering this, and then after that, I'm going to pretend I never said anything about it. But I'm giving away autographed copies of my book, Rollback, which I've sometimes thought should have been called Why Everything Should Be Abolished, and it really does go through pretty much everything. Signed and personalized copies of that book for people who sign up for my libertyclassroom.com, which if you have not checked out, check that out. Click on courses. Look at all the stuff that's available. You don't have to sit in front of your computer at a particular time. You can put it in your car and drive around and learn stuff from people who aren't going to, well, let's say, lie to you. I was going to say a bad word, but I want to keep this super clean, this podcast. So check that out, libertyclassroom.com. Sign up and then drop me a note on the contact page at libertyclassroom.com and say, yes, I would like the book. Here's my address. Make it out to me, etc. And I'll gladly do that for you. Coming up later this week, we got Walter Block, Mr. Libertarian himself. Also, Dan McCarthy of the American Conservative. And I did manage to get Eric Voorhees. And we're going to talk about the future of Bitcoin after Silk Road. So a lot to talk about this week. And also, if you have anything you want me to talk about, if there's some article you want refuted or some topic that you don't understand or you want comment on, please do send me a comment on the comment page at tomwoods.com. I don't think on the Tom Woods radio page there's a contact page. So go to my personal page, tomwoods.com, and just send me a little note. And I can't necessarily reply to you. I'm getting just hundreds and hundreds of emails. I have four little kids. I have a wife who's going through a difficult pregnancy. It's hard to do the email that I get already. But just know that your suggestion will be very gratefully received. Okay, today I'm very glad to turn now to our old friend Mark Sisson, whom I've talked to a couple times as fill-in host of the Peter Schiff Show. And when I interviewed him in, I don't know, was it 2011 maybe? It might even have been earlier than that. I guess 2011. That interview I've gotten more comments on than all other interviews I've ever done put together, where people have written to me to say, this thing just completely changed my life it for the better. I'm so glad I stumbled upon this interview. If you're interested in that, remember you can go to tomwoods.com/primal, where you'll find some information on that. But Mark Sisson is the guy we associate with the Primal Blueprint. What's the Primal Blueprint? We're going to find out in just a minute. It has to do with your health, not just your diet, but your overall health. And this is not one of these scams or schemes, because I can tell you that I've done it. A lot of people I know have done it. I've observed the effects on people. And if it whets your appetite any, it involves doing pretty much the opposite of what Michelle Obama urges you to do. Well, who is Mark Sisson? Well, in addition to being the author of the groundbreaking book, The Primal Blueprint, he's also the author of The Primal Blueprint, 21-Day Total Body Transformation, which I did. I went through that book. The Primal Blueprint Cookbook, and many other titles in the Primal series. In addition to his most recent book, The Primal Connection, which we'll talk about in just a minute, Mark is also a former distance runner, triathlete, and Ironman competitor. Mark had a top five finish in the 1980 U.S. National Marathon Championships and earned a qualifying spot for the 1980 U.S. Olympic Trials. I urge you to check out his website, marksdailyapple.com. What a community of readers he has there. You're definitely going to learn something there, always something interesting, and always something inspiring at marksdailyapple.com. In fact, just as a personal favor to me, just head on over there and check it out. Just look around for a little while. Worst case scenario, you lose a couple of minutes, but think of all the stuff you're gaining by listening to the Tom Woods Show, right? What's 2 minutes in your life to check out marksdailyapple.com? But all these different credentials and qualifications and books he has under his belt. And for these reasons and more, I am very glad to welcome Mark Sisson. Mark, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm great, Tom. Good to be here.
Thanks so much. All right. Now, obviously, we have to start off with the required question. What is the Primal Blueprint? Can you explain it? So I can think of no one better to do this than you, Mark. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, the Primal Blueprint is a strategy for achieving a lean, strong, fit, healthy body with the least amount of pain, suffering, sacrifice, and discipline possible. Now, how we do that is by calling on modern genetic science and evolutionary biology to give our genes what our genes expect. The premise is that we've evolved to be these lean, upright, fit human beings over millions of years of evolution, and that our genes were forged in this crucible of starvation and hard times and tough times, and they expect certain inputs. When we don't give our body these inputs, those genes take steps to protect us. They might make us fat because they're storing food. They might make us inflamed because they assume that we're under some assault because of the bad foods we're eating. So the Primal Blueprint looks at all of these hidden genetic switches that we can access to be as healthy as possible.
Now, I guess before we say something about your new book, Primal Connection, the thing that drew me in to your circles really was the personal testimonies from people at your site, marksdailyapple.com, and all around the internet. Lou Rockwell has featured a lot of them. And also, I've seen them with my own two eyes. So, the thing is that you don't have to stretch and tell us a story about a guy who was 1,000 pounds and barely clinging to life, and now he's 150 and doing great. You've got so many just regular guy testimonies. What would be like the typical kind of testimony that you get that you publish weekly on your site?
The typical testimony is somebody who was frustrated after years of trying the conventional wisdom of losing weight or achieving better health. You know, so many people come to the Primal Blueprint not just because they're overweight, but because they have type 2 diabetes, or women who have polycystic ovarian syndrome, or they've got thyroid issues, or, you know, all manner of different lifestyle problems that are afflicting people these days. And so the standard testimonial is, dude, I lost 50 pounds or 70 pounds in the last 8 months. I'm off my meds. I've never had more energy. But the single greatest thing about this program is I know I can do this for the rest of my life.
Now, let's take a minute, though. Tell us, because I mentioned in the intro about the books that you've written and your most recent book. Tell us about what is the Primal Connection.
Well, whereas the Primal Blueprint, the initial book, really focused on diet and exercise as the prime modalities for achieving this health, the Primal Connection looks at what amounts to all the other things that our hunter-gatherer genes expect of us. How do we orchestrate our sleep so that we get, you know, enough that we don't get negatively impacted by stress? How much sun do we really need, and how important is sun exposure, and how do you achieve that? We look at things like going out in nature, because our brains are wired to expect the frequencies found in nature and not the cacophony found in an urban setting. Well, if you live in an urban setting, there are ways that you can achieve those sorts of resonance. You just have to figure out how to get that. And we talk about that in the Primal Connection. Our genes expect us to play in the dirt. You know, our immune systems are supposed to be learning from exposure to soil organisms and organisms in the food. And when we live this overly clean, pristine, hygienic environment, we don't give our immune systems an opportunity to learn how to protect us from the real serious stuff. So all of the sort of other aspects of life are embodied in the Primal Connection.
All right, so it sounds to me like a couple of books that one would want to read in tandem, that reinforce each other according to different aspects.
Absolutely. The Primal Blueprint would be the first one, you know, how to dial in your diet and your exercise, and then the Primal Connection, how to kind of bring in all those other elements of your life with the intention of being not just healthy, but happy.
Can you explain for people what the difference might be between what we would call good fats and bad fats? Because people have, I think, we've internalized this idea that fat makes you fat, because it's the word fat, and we see low fat all around us, and the first lady is imposing these low fat, high carb meals on the school lunches, and the kids are all starving midway through the day because they haven't had any fats. Can you just sort that out so the average person doesn't feel like if I eat too many olives, I'm gonna be a monster?
Well, it's a fairly complex equation here, because what we're trying to do with the Primal Blueprint diet is modulate insulin response. And so carbohydrates tend to raise insulin. Insulin is a fat storage hormone. So the more insulin you have, the more you store excess calories as fat, whether it's dietary fat or carbohydrate or protein. So one of the things that we've assumed over the years, or at least conventional wisdom has assumed, is that fat makes you fat. Well, in fact, carbohydrates are really what make you fat in excess. And so the main notion we try to arrive at with the Primal Blueprint is there are certain types of fats that are actually important and that you get them. Saturated fat is not the enemy. There are certain amounts of saturated fat that are actually encouraged within the Primal Blueprint diet. But there are fats that, you know, I think everyone would recognize are bad for you. Trans fats are definitely bad for everybody. There are certain forms of polyunsaturated fats, the omega-6 variety, that would be found, say, in vegetable oils, in corn oil, safflower oil, soybean oil, things like that, that are pro-inflammatory, and we would be well advised to get rid of those. But having said that, if you do understand that fat in and of itself isn't what makes you fat, particularly if you get the healthy fats, and that includes, by the way, meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, and seeds, that if you get the appropriate amounts of fats, they actually not only don't make you fat, they probably help your body become better at burning off your own stored body fat, which is really what we all want.
Well, you know, Mark, a lot of times when I talk to primal people and we get chatting, a lot of the jokes revolve around bacon. People love to make to celebrate the fact that they can have all, within reason, they can have all the bacon they want, right? So can you unpack why we would normally feel funny about, if I have bacon and eggs, we're sort of taught that that's the worst breakfast you can have, right? You should be having a bran muffin or something. Right. Why is that exactly the opposite of the truth?
Well, it sort of became a little bit of a cliche, this whole bacon thing, because exactly what you just said, that the conventional wisdom of the past several decades would be that bacon is probably the worst food you can eat. And what we've decided, or what we've uncovered with this Primal Blueprint and with this whole paleo style of eating, is that bacon is not only not that bad, in small amounts, it's good for you, it's appropriate to have it, and it satisfies a craving or an urge that a lot of people have. Now, some people, I think, have gone overboard, and I've seen bacon brownies and bacon bread and bacon spreads and everything else. And, you know, I think a little bit of bacon is a good thing, probably too much. Just, you know, I don't want to get sick of bacon, but that it's just become kind of a cliche that people glom onto, because, you know, a lot of what we do within the Primal Blueprint and this whole paleo eating world, by the way, not unlike a typical libertarian experience, is to thumb your nose at the establishment and say, look, you know, this, I've discovered that you've been giving me the wrong information for the past 30 years, and here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, now let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, there are two things you mentioned there, that both of which I want to delve into. You mentioned the paleo thing, but let's say a little bit more about this matter of the food pyramid. That I mean, kids memorize this thing in school. They reproduce it. They color it in. They've got the grains right at the bottom. You have to have 11 servings a day or whatever the recommended amount is. And you're suggesting that the pyramid, if we even should think of food in that way, should be ordered in a completely different way. So, I mean, what would the Primal Blueprint food pyramid look like?
Well, we have one. And what it looks like is there are meat, fish, fowl, and eggs at the base of the pyramid. We eliminate entirely the whole grain tier, if you will, because we're quite convinced within this scientific community that I play around in with paleo and ancestral health that grains are antithetical to human health. Not only are they should they not be recommended, but they should probably be avoided to the extent possible. So meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds on the bottom, vegetables, and we encourage copious amounts of vegetables, and then minor amounts of oils and herbs and spices and things like that. So there's a reordering of the pyramid, if you will, even though I don't really like the term pyramid. It sort of has some negative connotations across the board in terms of dictating what people should eat. I think what we're trying to do is just educate people on choices and say, look, I don't care what you choose to eat. I just want you to be aware of the ramifications of your choice. And if you choose to eat grains, even after I suggested you don't, I'm not, we could still be friends. It's just that I want you to understand what happens to your body if you overdo the grain thing, or if you overdo the sugar thing, or if you overdo the omega-6 fats. So this is really my opportunity to educate a public about the choices they're making.
Now, is there anything to this idea that I hear sometimes that grains just in the past 50 or 100 years are somehow different from grains in the past? They've gotten worse in some way because of some type of engineering. I mean, forgive my ignorance, but I hear this a lot. Does this ring any bells with you? What does this mean?
Well, the farm industry is always trying to improve yield. And one of the things that the vegetarian movement and the macrobiotic movement, years ago, always stressed was that you can get all your protein from non-animal sources. So the grain industry said, well, look, gluten is the storage form of protein in grains. Why don't we increase the gluten content in all of the grains? That way we can advertise that grains have more, they have more protein than they did, say, 50 or 60 years ago. So there's been this movement to increase the amount of gluten in grains. But the reality is that gluten isn't good for human consumption. Now, we've all heard of gluten intolerance, and we know people who maybe have tested positive for celiac disease or who have serious gastrointestinal problems as a result of eating gluten. But I would suggest that almost everybody has some level of negative response to taking in gluten or these grain proteins. So, yes, in the past 50 years, as we've increased the amount of gluten in grains, we've just made a bad situation worse.
Have you seen any movement among, I realize it's hopeless to look to the White House or any of these places for dietary advice, but how about among private nutritionists? Have you seen any evolution in their thinking more in line with what you're saying, or are they all still talking in terms of buy some Weight Watchers frozen dinners and you'll be fine?
Oh, no, I'm seeing a huge movement in the nutrition counseling field where people are understanding the concept of epigenetics, how your food and your exercise movements affect how your genes express themselves in rebuilding you on a minute-by-minute basis, and the impact that food has on that, and how, again, the conventional wisdom has been so wrong in so many areas. So, oddly enough, what I see are young people who have come to the Primal Blueprint or to some paleo way of eating and say, look, I really love this. I want to teach this. Then they find out the only way that they can, or not the only way, but a major way that they can make this a life career is by going back and getting an RD, become a registered dietitian. So they have to go, take a series of courses that teaches them the old way of thinking just so they can get a certificate to hang on their wall and then start teaching the new way. It's really quite perverse, if you ask me, but that's the choice that these young people are making in going into this field. They have to suck it up and learn the old dogmatic way of thinking and then be able to apply this new exciting way of literally, it's such an empowering feeling to be able to understand that you can affect your health and your happiness on a daily basis based simply on food choices.
Mark, maybe there is at least, as long as they're stuck there learning the old way, the silver lining of this will mean that when they get out there in the public eye, they're going to know both sides inside and out, whereas the older folks are going to know, I don't mean chronologically old, I mean in terms of their thinking, they're just going to know their dogma, their propaganda, and it's good for, if I may say, our side of things to have this complete knowledge of here's what people used to think, here's what we think now, and then they can go out there and I think be even more effective in spreading this stuff. Now, when we talk, though, about people, again, it's easy to pick on the First Lady just because that school lunch thing just sticks in my, I mean, school lunches were bad enough to start with, and most of the time we send our kids with their own lunch, but is it also, are there any, I mean, most of that is just informal advice that comes from government officials, but is there anything that any government agency like the FDA is doing by commission or omission that is intensifying the disinformation?
I don't think so. I just think that there's a, you know, there's a huge impasse that you encounter every step of the way when you try to change public policy. And it's just the nature of the beast. It's become so cumbersome and so impossible to affect change that this is sort of the exciting thing about what we do, and the fact that because this is a grassroots movement, the real inroads are going to be made not just in me telling you, you know, what I did to lose 50 pounds, but in corporations who are willing to take on pilot studies and say, okay, we've got 2,000 employees that are have metabolic syndrome or type 2 diabetes or have issues, back lower back pain or whatever. We're going to do a pilot study where we're going to throw a little bit of money at this, really, and encourage them all to take on this Primal Blueprint lifestyle. And at the end of 6 months or a year, I can show you how you've saved $2 or $3 million in bottom line costs. Again, it's just about the economics of this thing. That's where the real strength of this movement is going to come. It's going to come from private industry and the market forces demonstrating the positive bottom line benefits. It's not going to come from top down public policy.
Now, I do want to distinguish a little bit between what you're talking about, what you call the Primal Blueprint, and the paleo people. Now, obviously, there's a lot of friendly overlap here. I have a paleo cookbook at home, and I think you wrote the foreword or the introduction to it. So we're all friends here to some degree. But the Primal Blueprint sort of being your brand, I am interested in distinguishing the two. I mean, I know it's not just this. It's more than just dairy. But can you explain the difference between the two? And then I want to ask you about dairy. Are you saying that dairy is something that we can tolerate, so therefore let's not take it away and be killjoys, or is it a positive good?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first part of your question, the difference between the two, paleo really started out as a diet and a way of looking at, again, orchestrating a daily diet to emulate a hunter-gatherer experience in the context of the 21st century. How do I eat like a hunter-gatherer would have eaten today? And that became really the main sphere of paleo. The Primal Blueprint has always been about the full lifestyle. It's been about not just the diet, but the exercise patterns. It's been about the sleep, the sun exposure, the amount of play you get, how much you use your brain. It's been more of a complete lifestyle rather than paleo just being a kind of a dietary thing. But within, if you compare just the dietary aspects of the Primal Blueprint versus the paleo diet, initially you saw that paleo was still sort of avoiding saturated fats. Now they've come on board and said, you know what, saturated fats are, you're right, they're not the bad guy. There's no correlation between saturated fat and heart disease. And provided you get other sources of macronutrients, saturated fats are probably a good thing. Seems that the paleo diet still sort of doesn't accept dairy as an appropriate food for humans. On the other hand, when I designed the Primal Blueprint, I wanted to be as inclusive as possible. I wanted as many people to come on board and say, I'm going to try this for 30 days. And if I get the results I'm expecting, I'll love it. I'll keep doing it and it'll be great. Now, with regard to dairy, there are some people who are lactose intolerant, for sure. But for those people who are not lactose intolerant and who consider some form of cheese or a cream in their coffee or, you know, butter, which is basically 100% fat, those are all very acceptable. And again, all these foods fall on the spectrum, Tom, so they go from best choices to worst choices. I would never tell anybody, even if they liked milk or were lactose tolerant, to go into a store and buy homogenized, pasteurized 2% milk. I think that stuff is an abomination. But, you know, raw milk for some people is appropriate. Artisanal cheeses for some people are appropriate. So that's a difference between the paleo and the primal. We talk about using a little bit of red wine being okay within, again, moderation on the Primal Blueprint. I think the paleo people have started to adopt that as appropriate as well. We make a big deal of chocolate being, again, even though the caveman didn't have chocolate, there's enough good science behind the polyphenols and some of the antioxidants in chocolate to suggest that for a treat, as opposed to living some monastic, sacrificial, light lifestyle and giving up everything, that chocolate would be, 90% chocolate would be an appropriate treat for a lot of people to have, to give them the kind of experience on this Primal Blueprint eating strategy where they can say, look, this is easy to do. All I had to do was give up grains. I had to give up some of the nasty vegetable oils. But for the most part, I'm eating meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, a little bit of wine if I like wine, a little bit of chocolate, some cheese once in a while. It's a very inclusive eating strategy.
Well, you hit on the raw milk issue, which I was going to ask you about anyway. So your view is that it's certainly preferable to the homogenized Hood brand 2% milk that you see that is served basically everywhere, by the way, in hotels, whenever they have a free breakfast in the hotels, always, you never can get whole milk anymore, which I remember when I was a kid, I was taught that you got to avoid, well, not when I was a kid, but when I got to college, I was taught, you got to avoid the whole milk. You got to have as skim as possible. And the monstrosities that I consumed when I look back on it, it's just appalling. But, I want to ask you though about, what do you think about the sweetener stevia? Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, stevia is an example of a naturally occurring herb that can be processed to a certain extent and become a form of sweetening that people can add to certain things. The caution that I would offer, though, is that one of the things that we're trying to do within the Primal Blueprint is decrease our cravings for sweet things in the first place. Mm. The brain is wired over millions of years of evolution to crave sweet things because historically, up until about 300 years ago, there were no sweet things available in large quantities. Until the sugar industry came on the scene, the ability to find sweet things was so rare that when you did happen either a stash of bee honey or some overripe fruit or whatever, you tended to gorge on it. Because that was the brain telling you this is a unique, safe kind of treat and a source of energy and fuel that we can take on right now. Well, obviously today we have sweet things at every turn, every street corner, everywhere you go. There's a overabundance of sweet things, and that's, I think, one of the reasons that so many of us are overweight is because our brains are telling us eat sweets, eat sweets, eat sweets. So the first thing we do within the Primal Blueprint is we say, okay, we're going to cut down the sugar for sure. And then we're going to cut back on the processed carbohydrates that you would find, again, the flours, the wheat flours, the grain flours, and things like that, because those convert to glucose in the bloodstream readily as well. And that's glucose in the bloodstream is sugar. So ultimately, we're looking to decrease our cravings for these sweet things. And we kind of sabotage that intent a little bit when we continue to sweeten things, even using artificial sweeteners. So while stevia is healthy and fine and wonderful, I caution the overuse of it simply because it is so sweet that it continues to promote this craving for sweet things that we want to get rid of.
All right, that's a very, very interesting answer because I really still struggle with the craving for sweets. And I've fallen a little bit off the wagon. I forget what the expression is, off the wagon or on the wagon, whichever one it is where I've gotten more lax recently, just because with our house, we've got a fifth child on the way and the household, it's very labor intensive around the house. And so it's easy to slip and slide here and there. But because I make so many YouTube videos or so many pictures of me or around Facebook, it's funny, people can observe, it's like Oprah on a small scale. They can observe the evolution of my body over
right.
They meet me in person and say, my gosh, you're a rail. So then I have to, on the other hand, be careful that I don't balloon out again, because people will say, oh my gosh, yeah, look at this. He's gone back to his old way. So I have actually used stevia recently, but that is actually a good cautionary note. Now, let me ask you, is there anything that you've come across in research or studies or news items or anything that has given you pause or has made you reconsider any aspect of the Primal Blueprint?
Very good question. Short answer is no, but I reserve the right to change my mind or to reconsider some of these things as information does come down the pike, if you will. I mean, I've said for the longest time that my philosophy is that the less sugar you burn in a lifetime, the better off you are. So the more you can decrease your dependence on carbohydrates and the more you can become what we call a fat-burning beast, that you can develop this this skill, if you will, to access stored body fat and use that for fuel so that your body achieves what we call its ideal body composition. Having said that, there's been some discussion in the past several years that, you know, some people go so off in the other direction of very low carb that they have issues that, you know, may manifest over long periods of time, and that maybe those are people who need to increase the amount of carbohydrates they take in. So, you know, we look at that and we go, okay, you know, show me some research. Let's look into that. Let's investigate that. Let's not be so dogmatic, if you will, in our recommendations about cutting back on sugars or carbohydrates. So yeah, I'm always listening to my audience. You know, we have over 2 million unique visitors a month at Mark's Daily Apple, and these people are very vocal, and they're very voracious consumers of the information, and they'll let me know if they think that something's off. So it's been a great experience to have this blog and to have people comment and say, well, would you consider, you know, something else or another point of view, or would you rethink that? It's been a very, again, it's, you know, like my own personal wiki here. It's been a very useful tool to hone my message.
Mark, I want to give you a chance as we wrap up here to precisely to plug marksdailyapple.com, because a lot of the ideas that you talk about, like as with any of us, if I absolutely had to, I could distill a lot of my message into 10 bullet points. But yet I'm able to blog frequently and elaborate on things and find news items so that even though it is just a certain number of points, there's an endless amount of things to talk about. So how is it that you're able to keep things fresh and interesting so that people keep coming back over and over again to marksdailyapple.com?
Because every time, again, we open one door and all of a sudden there's four more doors at the end of the hall. I mean, it's every time we pose some unique point of view about a way of eating or about a lifestyle or about a movement pattern, there are so many different people who can comment on that and who can raise questions. We just, at my company, we just keep amassing a list of more and more questions. Okay, here was a real specific thing. Okay, if omega-3 fats are supposed to be good for you, then, you know, and this guy over here is saying maybe an excess of omega-3 fats isn't good for you. You know, there's four articles that we could write just on that. So it's become this challenge to distill the information to the most reader-friendly, usable format. And yet, if you go to my site, we've got 3,000 articles that I've written over the past 7 years. And it's, you know, it's quite a huge amount of information to cull through. But you'll see that it's that, you know, that's why the books and the we do events and things like that to sort of distill this information into the what you call the bullet points. But the nuances are always so interesting and incredible. And, you know, ultimately, at the bottom line, while I say everybody's metabolism, the biology all works the same way, the degree to which it works from one person to another is very individualized. And that's where the interesting areas of self-experimentation come in. And that's where we have fun playing at the margin and suggesting, okay, maybe try this or maybe, you know, do this a little bit differently.
Well, Mark, I'm going to let you run, but I want to urge people who, I mean, of course, we all want overall health. I think people who gravitate to you, a lot of them initially are looking just to lose weight. And then as they do that, they realize, well, there are so many more benefits that come from this than just losing weight. But I think I can say, even though it does sound like a cliche, that if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and if you're also sick and tired of trying things that just don't work, well, I can tell you that I myself and many people I know who have listened to Mark, I mean, the interview that you and I did on the Peter Schiff show, we did two of them, but one of them a couple years ago, I get more comments on that to this day of people saying that one interview changed my whole life around than all other interviews I've done put together. So at the very least, you owe it to yourself to check out marksdailyapple.com, and even better, to read The Primal Blueprint and The Primal Connection, not to mention the cookbooks and stuff that I mentioned at the outset. Mark, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Mark Sisson, everybody. Make sure and check out The Primal Blueprint and his most recent book, The Primal Connection. And of course, you're going to make sure and visit, as a favor to me, marksdailyapple.com. Don't forget, also check out my events page at tomwoods.com/events, because I'm going to be all over the place, Las Vegas, Raleigh, North Carolina. A couple of dates in the St. Louis area, and then in Miami University, at Miami University in the Cincinnati area, with other dates consistently being added. I'm going to be in Houston next year and Grove City, Pennsylvania. So please make sure and come on out and pay me a visit. And don't forget, libertyclassroom.com this week, special giveaway of Rollback, which is some pretty fun stuff there. Why everything should be abolished. You already know it should be, but here's why. All right, thanks everybody for listening in. Walter Block tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.